Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches. Our first speaker is Robert Hardman, a columnist on The Telegraph first and then on The Mail, and a regular on the BBC at state occasions. Please forgive Robert if he looks a bit intimidated today. The last two people he's talked to at The Mail were Donald Trump and Nigel Farage. I've just warned him he's now addressing the most powerful people in the world, oldie readers, so forgive him if he's a bit terrified. And he's written four biographies of the Queen, and his latest is Elizabeth II in Private, in Public, The Inside Story. Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Hardman.
Thank you very much, Harry. Thank you all very much for coming, and what a pleasure to be at an oldie lunch, oldie that's given awards to multiple members of the royal family, actually, over the years, and rightly so. As Harry said, I've written another book on Her Late Majesty, and it's not the first. My children did say when I said I was doing another book on Elizabeth II, "Dad, not another one. You're a stalker." And I did point out that actually all the other ones have been on specific themes while she was alive, and this is the first full life portrait retrospectively. So it is different writing it in the past tense. And people did say, well, there can't be anything new to say. And all I can say, and I'm sure Hugo will say the same, there's an awful lot new to say. There are all sorts of, there are new documents, there are new people to talk to. I might come on to the resident of Mar-a-Lago in a minute. There are new stories out there, and you know, where in the book there's everything from the real story of Tiara Gate, for those who are aficionados of jewellery rows between Harry, Meghan, and the royal family, or the story of how Prince Andrew hit the master of the household, but and completely different. The stories of going back, right back to the start of the reign, during the war, the Queen's relations with all her prime ministers. But I thought for today, given that we are, as well as celebrating her centenary, we're also celebrating 250 years of the USA very shortly, and that anniversary, of course, was what brought about that extraordinary state visit just the other day with the King in Washington, and I was there to see that. And I just thought that was an absolute exemplary exercise in soft power. We hear a lot about soft power, but I mean, that was it. If state visits are about anything, they're about making two nations feel better about each other and also feel better about themselves, and it did that, and it very much reminded me of the late Queen's state visit, actually, of Ireland in 2011, which I covered, which again was one of those moments where you just saw monarchy doing stuff that politicians simply cannot do, and it was great. And so with that in mind, I just thought I didn't have long, but I just sort of reflect on her soft power, Elizabeth II's soft power, through the prism of the transatlantic relationship. To her, Britain's relationship with America was absolutely central to her worldview throughout her life, right the way from as a teenage child growing up in the War of Windsor, and that period when it looked as though at any minute this country could be invaded, and her father could be put up against a wall, the whole family could be put up against a wall. And suddenly the US come in, the cavalry arrive, and everything's going to be okay. She loved the glamour of Hollywood. She loved all things American. And her first visit there was in 1951, when she went to see and stay with President Harry Truman. And that was the first of the 14 presidents she came to know. No one else In history, Americans included, have known or met 14 presidents. I interviewed one of them. I interviewed George W. Bush. I said, can you think of anybody, Mr. President, who has met 14 presidents? And he said, well, I've also one, so has my dad, but I can't. So I thought Henry Kissinger might have clocked up 10 or 11. But 51, she's there. And then she, of course, accedes to the throne in 52. And after that initial golden era, if you like, around the coronation, things start to get a bit wobbly in the late 50s. And, of course, we have a situation where London and Washington are at very serious loggerheads over a row, a Middle East row, to do with the waterway. This all sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? And so what do we do? What does Britain do at this point? And this is, of course, the Suez Crisis. We send the monarch on a state visit to the USA. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And it's a great success. 1957, she arrives and she addresses the UN. She goes to a football match. She goes to her first ever visit to a supermarket. And she dances with the president at the White House. And there's ticker tape parades. And by the end, everything is back on track. It's fine. And her relationship with the US, it carries on, again, through one or two tricky periods. I mean, through the 60s, obviously Britain and America are at loggerheads again over the Vietnam War. But she's not. She's Queen of Australia. She's got troops in Vietnam. Britain hasn't. She has. So there's a sort of different dynamic. There are all the way through her reign, there is this this dual, if you like, this dual special relationship. We hear a lot about the special relationship. At the moment, the one between White House and Downing Street, it's not very special, let's face it. There's the one between the White House and the palace, and that is a much more enduring one. That's going strong, and it carried on all through her reign, and it picked up again with the arrival of Richard Nixon. He came to lunch at the palace in 68, and actually at the end of that lunch invited the now King and Princess Anne on their first ever trip to Washington. They came to stay at the White House. So that's when the King had his first visit to the White House, back in 1970. And of course, a lot of you, I imagine most of you, and I do, remember the bicentenary exactly 50 years ago. USA is celebrating 200 years. It's a fabulous party up and down the east coast of America. The Queen's got a yacht. It's all great. Everybody's having a lovely time. The only glitch is the famous evening on the White House lawn when President Ford invites the Queen up onto the dance floor for the very first dance. And at that moment, she goes up and they start dancing and the band starts playing. That's why the lady is a tramp. And Ford is furious. The Queen thinks it's hilarious. Dines out on it forever after. And then along come the Reagans fairly soon after that. The Reagan years, the Queen and Reagan got on like a house on fire. The famous picture of them riding in the park. At the end of that visit, Reagan invited the Queen. She always wanted to go to Hollywood. Her lifelong ambition was to go to Hollywood. And when you're a head of state, you have to go to Washington, because that's where state visits happen. And Reagan said, you know what, I'm going to invite you not on a state visit. We'll call it an official visit, and then you can come to my home state of California, and I'll sort out a dinner in Hollywood. And that's what happened. She loved that. And she was back again on her famous 1991 state visit, when she addressed Congress, first monarch to address Congress. And that was a huge hit. Particularly, she kicked off with a joke, actually. You may remember that the whole visit started when she was at a podium like this, which was set up for George H. Bush. It was about this tall. The Queen's down here. And so when she's standing there, it's like that. And the NBC commentator goes, all I got me is a talking hat. And it's known as the Talking Hat Tour. And the next day she stood up in Congress and mumbled, I hope you can all see me today. At which point she got her first sort of standing ovation within about 10 seconds. It carried on this great friendship she had with the US all the way through. Her last state visit was in 07 with George W. Bush, but she continued to keep that relationship going even when she'd given up long-haul travel. In 2011, she decided, I'm not doing any more long-haul travel, partly out of concern for Prince Philip, actually. And she gave up all international travel completely in 2015. But despite that, all presidents were always very welcome. And her last state visitor, the last state visitor of her record-breaking reign, came in 2019, Donald J. Trump. And when I was writing my book, I managed to get an interview with him and went to see him at Mar-a-Lago just 4 months ago. Didn't start too well. He was on his golf course, and I said, "It's very nice of you to give me an interview, Mr. President." He said, "I don't know anything about an interview. I'm not doing an interview. I'm here to play golf." And do you play golf? And I said, "I'm afraid I don't." "You don't play golf and you're British?" So that wasn't great, but after a while I said, "Well, look, I'm here because you were the last state visitor of her reign, and it seemed to go very well. Do you have anything to say on that?" He went, "Okay, do you want something to eat?" And we sat down and had breakfast, and he talked at length about how much he admired her, how to him she was just a sort of exemplary royal figure, but also how much he loved the royal family, how much he loved the king, what an admirer he was of Prince William. And over the course of a weekend, we had various chats at various points, and it was very straightforward. I mean, there were no great sort of layers, complications, or whatever. It was just, you know, every time I asked him about the Queen, he'd always say the same thing, just go, "She was unbelievable." And so we had to sort of coax out a few more adjectives. And he just thought she was wonderful. So as I left, he asked me for some advice and said, "Look, I've got this picture." And he'd managed to get a copy of the last portrait ever painted of Elizabeth II. It was painted in the last year of her life by a Polish-British artist called Basia Hamilton, who I think has been to one or two of these launches, actually. And she'd painted this lovely picture of the Queen in pink, and she then went on to paint President Trump's portrait and told him about it. He said, "Right, I want to get a copy of that." And when I was there, he'd just taken delivery of this painting, and he was wondering where to put it, and he couldn't decide. He eventually decided she's got to be in a room on her own. I can't put her in a room with lots of other portraits. Quite a lot of portraits of him around the house, it must be said, and other people. And he said, "No, she's got to have a room of her own." So to this day, if you go into the dining room at Mar-a-Lago, where President Trump has his summits, that is where there's a sort of Venetian fresco on the wall. No other portraits. And someone's whacked a nail in the middle of the fresco, and there's the Queen in the middle of the room. And that, to me, ladies, that's soft power. And just as a footnote to that, I was in Washington the other day for the state visit, and I thought, "Well, he's given me an interview, that's very kind of him, I'll give him a book." And I sent a message through to the White House saying, "I'm here, I'd like to give the President a book." Didn't hear very much, didn't hear anything. And at the end of the state visit, I was heading to the airport and got a message saying, "Actually, the President will see you at 5:45. So whizzed round to the White House with book, and eventually went into the Oval Office. And he remembered me, he remembered the chair, and he looked at the book. He before he sort of formally accepted, he said, "I'm just going to look at the index to see what you're going to say about Trump." And slightly nervous, said, "Don't go to the page about Canada, please." Anyway, went to a page that was perfectly innocuous, and he went, "Okay, great." And we did a picture, we had a chat, and he repeated again. He just said how much he'd enjoyed his meetings with the Queen and with the King. And as I left, about 2 hours later, ping, up comes on social media, on Truth Social, this extraordinary post from him saying, "Congratulations on this book about a beloved and deeply respected woman." And this is nothing to do with me, it's nothing to do with my book, it's entirely to do with the subject of my book. It just goes to show that monarchy gets to places that no politician can possibly ever hope to go. It's entirely a reflection on her, which is why I'm extremely grateful to have had the opportunity to write about her life. And Sir Hugo, who will have lots of similar stories, but all I can say is we have lived under one of the greats, and I hope I've given you some indication why. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Radio Aldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Aldie magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter "old trial" as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter "old trial".